The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions. Welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, also known as Some Gadget Guy, your host on this terribly, awfully named podcast series. But of course, the Q&A stands for Q&A, question and answer. I like to make these podcasts interactive conversations when we stream them live. We can go through all of the top tech news stories of the last week, maybe some breaking news that took place over the weekend, sort out our feelings, take a little time following up on these topics, and then hit the ground running. We want to start our tech week off right, and that's why I like to host my show on a Monday, and I'm already seeing a kraken. Just a jam-packed chat for this week's show. Super stoked. Lots of people already joining the discussion, and we've got so much to talk about. And right off the bat, Gary the Fireman, subscribed to Tier 1, subscribed for 11 months, currently on a 5-month streak. Thank you so much, Gary, for supporting the production of this show and supporting a lot of the people that have been joining the conversation in the live chat. So I normally do my, you know, a magic mirror, you know, a romper room list of all the names that are in this chat, but I'm going to jump right in. We have so much to talk about. We've got Microsoft news. We've got Microsoft and Apple news. We've got, I posted a question in the live chat just before we got started here about how much we should be hating on the Galaxy Note 20. So we've got that to talk about too. And then I want to wrap up the second half of the podcast, the gadget block, just how charmed I've been by the Pixel 4a. So there's a bit. We're here. Yeah, so let's just jump in. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. Myself personally, I feel like I've been doing a better job of not completely unplugging, but diminishing my online activity over the weekend. You know, spending a little bit more time with my family. We were able to do some socially distanced family visiting, and we ate some carnitas with my cousin. Was really nice. So I'm kind of coming back fresh. I'm feeling really good. This is a podcast that I'm hoping won't keep descending into the Bummersville that we've been having for the last couple of weeks, where we start talking about some topics, there's like a silver lining, and then we all just commiserate on how lame everything is right now. I'm feeling a lot better this week, so I think we need to. I think we can spruce this week up a bit. So let's cut through some housekeeping. Let's get that out of the way, and then we can jump right into some news. And I love this. See, this is what I love about jumping into some of these topics. I'm already like going through, you know, the Suco 1, Note 20 versus Pixel 4a. I mean, that's literally where we are in tech commentary today. Is there is a strong argument to be made for pitting a $1,000 phone directly against a $350 phone. We're in uncharted territory here, people. So, housekeeping is long. I'm gonna go fast, but we always know that means it's still gonna take a while. I got a lot of stuff out last week, and unfortunately, I'm even like kind of cutting some of the links that we produced some content at Newegg. Go check out the Newegg YouTube channel because we've been on fire, getting videos out over on Newegg too. But kicking over into screen share, all of the links and stories and news and articles and housekeeping, you can find all of the links on somegadgetguide.com. Immediately, right after my podcast last week, I had to do a little budget showdown. You know, we've got all this news on $1,000, $1,200, $1,400 folding phones. And there are some really good options if you want to start shopping sub $300. And so I wrote up an article just pitting the TCL 10L against the LG Stylo 6 as two examples of how we get to sub $300 pricing. And in the case of the Stylo 6, I mean, that's a phone that can often be found on sale for around $150 after tax and shipping. This is not as punishing territory as it used to be. This is a fun fight now. Entry level is becoming a more exciting fight. And I feel like we techies do a disservice to a broader community of tech users when we ignore this entry level, you know, sub 300. I mean, it's insane. It's crazy. Moving right along, this was a heavy week for audio. Last week, I was doing a lot of audio. So this is a part of my hashtag 2020 hearing series. Let me kick back over into the camera here. Hashtag 2020 hearing. It's the year 2020, like 2020 vision. We want to focus a little bit more on our hearing health. And coming out of CES at the beginning of the year, there were a number of products that were kind of exciting. There's a whole new trend in hearables, you know, wearables, but hearables. So advanced noise reduction, they can help you focus on human speech or just reduce noise in your environment to hear incidental sound. And last year, I took Nuhura, the IQ Buds, I can't remember what, like IQ Buds Max, I think they were called. Well, they released a new version of those, but of course, with the situation, a lot of these smaller boutique companies, their manufacturing was totally wrecked. Well, those companies are coming back. We're getting product out the door, and we're starting to see it show up in consumers' hands. The Nuhura are still technically on pre-order, I believe, but I spent about a week using those as sort of a crossover. They're noise reduction hearing buds that also can somewhat function like hearing aids, and they perform phenomenally well. But not to be outdone, there's a competing product by a company called Olive Union. So I also spent a week test driving the Olive Union Smart Ear, and both of those reviews came out last week. And I'm thinking about writing an article, just a text piece, comparing the two, because they're very different solutions for very similar ideas, you know, not quite true medical grade hearing aids, but a little hearing assistance for someone who maybe has some hidden hearing loss or has a hard time following conversations in noisy environments. And then I had to shoot this video. So I don't know, folks, those of you out there, there's like a pattern, right? It gets a little tired when new phone comes out and we all rush to do unboxings and first impressions, and I'm trying to find ways to shake up my initial videos. I don't get excited unboxing product very often these days. I don't feel it's fair to try and work up that, oh, wow, this is so amazing, and it's cardboard, and you open it, and there's a charge cable under the phone. Oh, this is so cool. And, you know, like, I picked it up, and it didn't slice my hand open, so it feels really nice in the hand. You know, like, I don't know how many times we need to watch that video. So if someone's excited about unboxing a Pixel 4a, I feel you should go watch real excitement. Like, something honest, something genuine, someone who's really, like, I am excited to be opening this box. What I am excited by is what we can do with phones. And I'm kind of tired of caging phone commentary, gadget commentary in this, like, let me just read off the specs of GSM Arena. Because you can go to GSM Arena. They have a website. You don't need to have someone read you the website. So for the Pixel 4a, I wanted to do something different. One of the biggest common criticisms of the Pixel 3a was mid-ranger chipset. It's not good enough. It's not powerful enough. You don't want to be saddled with that. You know, I'm a discerning tech user and I need that extra power. But when you follow up those questions, you'd ask, like, well, what are you doing on your phone? I mean, I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just saying, where is it that the Pixel 3a was really holding you back? And I'd ask, like, well, are you doing a lot of intense gaming?
Oh, no, mobile gaming sucks. Who would do that?
Are you editing and rendering 4K video?
Oh, who would do something like that on a phone? You do that on a computer, not on a phone.
So, like, again, I'm asking you, where's the holdup? And there are definitely some things about the Pixel 3a I think could be deal breakers for more power users, but when I start asking those questions and gadget geeks can't tell me what advanced usage they're using that would be slowed down by this. So my Pixel 4a video is shooting a 4K video vlog and editing it and rendering it all on the Pixel 4a. And it looks really good. So again, I'm saying, like, if you want to shoot high quality 4K video, edit that video, add a watermark, slap a soundtrack on there, you know, control the volume, maybe do some color correction. Maybe you need to green screen and you want a chroma key and you shot that video in front of a green screen. The Pixel 4a is capable. It's not as fast at rendering as my LG V60 at more than twice the price, but it can still do it. So I want to know who's really held up by the Pixel 4a when it comes to stuff like that. So that's increasingly the kind of stuff that I'd really like to start doing more of on my channel. I don't need you. Let me rephrase that. You don't need another person like me going, well, it's got a Snapdragon 730 and 6 gigabits of RAM, and look at all the megapixels, and this processor has more hertz. You know, like, that's not content. That's not anything. So anyway, Pixel 4a, that's where I started the conversation off, was trying to show how I could really use it to do something which I would think is still pretty fairly heavy-duty smartphoning. 4K video production is kind of a big deal. Dave Burns, you can always use more hertz. Make it hertz more, and it's hertz good. Hertz so good. LG tone-free FN6, true wireless earbuds, a better direction. Better. These are better than the Galaxy Buds Live. True inner oral earbuds, true wireless from LG, the Tone brand. I got some pushback. Even one of the editors at The Verge was very concerned that I wasn't being fair to Samsung. So I just got to point that out. It's really cute when, you know, it should be fair. If you were going to compare the FN6, the in-ear buds from LG, to a Samsung product, you should compare it to an older, less SEO relevant Samsung product, so it doesn't make Samsung look bad. It's pretty cute. It's pretty cute. I'm still a little conflicted on tone freeze. I think this is a much better direction for LG. So you can catch that review. There are some very strong pros, some very personal cons. You know, they won't affect everybody, but I had to share what my experiences were using them. And a much nicer step in the right direction. I am super big time, absolutely not a fan of open ear earbuds. I feel like that is probably one of the biggest consumer generated causes of, or contributors, I should say, not causes, but contributing to hearing loss, as hearing loss is an epidemic. So, those were all of the major articles and videos that I put out, but, in a week, it's my birthday. I'm finally leaving my 30s. This is my last couple days of being a dude in my 30s. I'm very angsty about that. But I've been working on sort of a way to kind of help expand some of like the channel and the merchandise and, you know, some other fun things that, you know, they're important topics and causes to me. So the last little bit of housekeeping, if you'll pardon the plug here, it's a little bit of a commercial within the podcast, but I finally finalized the next design for a t-shirt. So I should have pulled up a drum roll sound effect, but the merch plug, I feel like this has been one of the strongest years yet for companies realizing the value and the utility of our beloved headphone jack. So I would like to bring more awareness to this cause with a t-shirt, where this is the Save the Headphone Jack Endangered Species t-shirt, available in a variety of styles, including a premium long sleeve and a very cute women's comfort tee. So you can also show your support for one of the most versatile and universally beloved connectors for our mobile devices, that there is still nothing that truly replaces the utility, the function, and the quality of a good headphone jack. And you can get it in a bunch of different colors. So three different styles, bunch of different colors. I'm still working with Teespring because they have this sort of moiré effect hitting the white edging. And that's not what the shirt really looks like when I got the proofs back. So I need to work on the preview image, but I can guarantee that the actual shirts are... Oh, my exposure is way too high. Well, let me see if I can... No, that's worse. But the shirts came out looking pretty good. So I'm really happy with how this design came out. And now I need to turn that back up so I'm not so dark. I'm doing it live, people. I'm doing it live. So Q3 Becker, but the headphone jack is 70 years old. I think the 3.5 millimeter flavor of it is, but I believe the phono jack, the original quarter inch, is over 100 years old. Someone correct me on that if I'm wrong. But yeah. Dave Burns, that image is jiffed hard. Yeah, it's not looking good. I'm gonna reach out and see if Teespring can kind of help clean that out. But that shirt is on sale. And if you're on the Patreon or on the Discord, there might be a coupon code for 10% off. Where if you're members of that Patreon or Discord, I have no problems with you sharing that coupon code publicly, but I'm going to let that be a bit of a scavenger hunt for folks who seem interested in wanting to save 10%. So that's going to be the game. I always like to turn things into a game. That's housekeeping, folks. I'm really excited. I'm going to bring back the bokeh shirt for a limited time after this podcast. If you wanted that, bokeh means mouth in Spanish shirt, that's going to be back. This design is going to make it to a mug, but my first proof on the mug came back awful. So I've got to tweak this design, fix this design, and then it'll also be on a mug. And of course, we also still have the Megapickle mugs, but I think I'm going to run a poll on the Patreon and ask what we should do to move Megapickle over to a t-shirt. This has been, I have three or four different proofs for Megapickle t-shirts, and I don't love any of them. So I don't know what to do with that. Dave Burns, cough, salt shaker, cough, cough. So, so when Juan gets salty, we should have some kind of Juan salt shaker merch. I love it. So folks, SomeGadgetGuy.com, all the links, all the promos, the merch, and then hopefully that merch will start showing up on my YouTube videos. They pulled my Megapickle mugs. I was really frustrated when YouTube sort of reorganized how they did merch because I had no idea. And you're like, great, YouTube, thanks. You're making this all so much more difficult for us to work on your platform. So let's get into some news. Oh, Blue Malicious, where's the unicorn barf shirt? Okay, so that's funny. We talked about this. Blue Malicious, was that like a year ago? I went to Fiverr just on a whim, and I threw about $20 around on Fiverr to commission someone to draw up an awful unicorn puking design. Because that was a running joke for a while, like how much I hate smartphone cameras that make everything all unicorn barfy and super vibrant and way too colorful. And again, all of the designs that came back is like I was getting what I was paying for. $20 for multiple options was not good. Nothing that would translate well to a t-shirt. So I've got to work on that too. But I really want to work that back into maybe a limited edition, you know, like I did with the bokeh shirt. All right. We've got a ton of news, and it's stuff that we need to keep track of. There are stories that we need to follow up on, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on news this week, and housekeeping. I knew housekeeping was going to run a little long. So, I am passing the buck on the Trump TikTok social media story. This is something that we've talked about in the past. This administration is not the right administration to look at reform for online media and social media services and Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This administration is the wrong administration to tackle that kind of nuance. So we've got a communication war happening. You know, Facebook from the United States has a terrible reputation, and TikTok from China has a terrible reputation. And Trump is trying to sign these executive orders that will probably legally, when they're challenged in court, will be absolutely toothless. So we're going to spend a ton of time, a ton of effort, and a huge amount of money fighting these things out in court. And for what I will predict is going to be almost zero positive consumer change, you know, for the people that are actually using these services and the people that are actually contributing. So rather than try and go down that rabbit hole, I'm actually going to point you to The Verge. There is a really solid write-up on this situation. The U.S. declared war on TikTok because it can't handle the truth. Written up by Sarah Zhang. This gets into the deep weeds of social justice and social media and what we do with PR and how countries try to manage their reputations, not just companies, but countries try to manage their reputations online, and taking this back to discussions of the civil rights movement versus Tiananmen Square, and you know how the media isn't covering things like detention centers for ICE here in the United States, but we're supposed to be outraged by how other countries handle similar human rights violations. This is a very well-researched, incredibly well-linked article breaking down a huge chunk of this current administration's social media issues. So I'm going to say go check this out. Give it a read. It's pretty dense. It's a lot. And I think Sarah Zhang deserves some kudos for putting together a really good look. I don't think anything can be truly comprehensive, but this is a really solid look at all of the little parts and pieces and machinations and why this administration is likely more concerned over certain aspects of social media, especially for how the Trump administration sort of came to power by utilizing social media. This is pretty heady stuff. So give that a read, and we'll save that for a future conversation when we get a little bit more info on what's going on. Again, this executive order, ByteDance and TikTok, I have to believe will be challenged in court and will probably fall apart. I just don't see where there's legal precedent to support what President Trump is trying to accomplish here. So, moving on. another quick piece of information. I'm going to be putting the link to this in the show notes on somegadgetguy.com. But if you were a fan of Google Plus back in the day, like I was, sorry, a little terrible ASMR for you there. Apologies. I'm going to be drinking a lot of water during this podcast. I won't do it all like that, though. I was huge into the Google Plus. I was one of those early users who got like 80,000 followers, and I was in all the circles, and I had these communities. I had a really hopping 3D, 3D and VR video community. Like, I ran it, I managed it. I was this hip, cool dude. You want to see all this cool 3D cam action? We can totally do that. Which is just funny because now, like, spherical video is kind of irrelevant for many consumers today too. But if you were on the Google's Plus, then you are probably eligible for, I don't know, maybe $10, something like that. There was a class action lawsuit over how Google utilized your data. So there you go. Google Plus profile litigation. It's googleplusdatalitigation.com. But like I said, I'll drop the link for that in the show notes. And you can fill in your claim. The claim deadline is October 8th. So go get some Google cash. Was it M Core Corin 3? No, across the podcast, I claimed my 12 bones. 12 whole dollars. It's not even worth the time to go and do it again. Unless you make less than minimum wage. I'm sorry, that's terrible. moving right along. Dave Burns, I got two emails. So I got two emails too, but that was because there was also that terrible era of YouTube and Google Plus. So my YouTube account is one account and my Google Plus account was a different account because I was really trying to use it socially, social media. So it was more of a personal page. And then my YouTube was on sort of a professional account. And so I don't think I need to file twice. I'm not going to do that because it was really frustrating when they merged, because then I ended up with a second Google Plus account that I was never going to use. It was awful. So go get your Google cash is the point of that story. One other just interesting Google litigation piece of information. We talked about this briefly a little while. I don't think it was last. No, it wasn't last week, because last week was my awful rambling pajama podcast. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Some early rumblings that the merger, the acquisition of Fitbit, that Google is facing some pressure by the EU, and now there is an official investigation happening into this acquisition. There's not a lot of news because we're just stepping into this, but the commission is concerned over the digital healthcare sector, interoperability with rivals, you know, wearables with Google's Android operating system. So will Fitbit continue to support iOS, which I would imagine they would. I mean, technically, you can use most Google products on iOS. But then also, you know, Google's an American multinational. Fitbit is an American company. There are concerns by the EU. So you can catch the entire PDF of the commission's early investigation and what the concerns are for this merger. I don't know. Anyone in the chat, how are we feeling? Do we want Google to buy out Fitbit? I don't know that I would be crestfallen or upset if this didn't happen. I'm still cranky about my beloved Focals. You know, like these beautiful, beautiful smart glasses that Focals got bought out by Google. And now this is a dead product. And that the Focals 2, which were going to be an awesome little upgrade over this, got shelved. And now Focals are just another sort of gravestone on the list of products that Google has not managed to maintain or has anything released by. So I'm not going to be too upset if Fitbit drops. What I would love to see is like maybe Fitbit gets bought out by a company like Garmin, you know, like that intellectual property, all of the stuff that they took from Pebble, fitness tracking, those health services, and then paired with Garmin, you know, rugged outdoors, GPS tracking, and all of that got lumped together would make me way happier than Fitbit under Google's tutelage right now. From Mango Bandito, maybe help on Android Wear will get better. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, Android Wear gets a lot of criticism for that, but I've got a Tick Watch and Mobvoi. I never know how to pronounce that company's name. But the company that makes the Tick Watch, the health apps on that are pretty solid. I mean, again, it pairs up with Google Fit. I can use it with their own proprietary app and service. LG's health tracking data was pretty solid. I mean, they're decent solutions. I mean, right now I would still probably point people towards a Galaxy Watch if they had the cash and they didn't want an Apple Watch, but I gotta say it's solid. Blue Malicious, would you call Google's Focal's purchase anti-competitive? I reckon it is. Well, in that there's zero competition, you know, I don't know that anyone's going to look at that and say it's anti-competitive because it's a market that technically doesn't exist. Face computers are not really a thing for consumers. Heads-up displays are really not a thing. So I don't think anyone would examine that million-dollar deal. Was it 20 million, something like that? And look at any significant harm to consumers when no one was buying these. It's just disappointing because I love watching boutique-y companies solve these major problems that mega corporations can't fix. And then I get real sad when they just get the plan was just to get bought out. And I'm really upset because especially in a time of wearing face masks and not wanting to handle my phone much in public and trying to keep things cleaner, it was really nice having a heads up display in a pair of glasses. So Gary the Fireman, Google will undoubtedly manage to kill Fitbit. And Dave Burns, I feel really sad still about Pebble. So sad. So Walt Semarista is saying Mobvoi is pronounced Ma Boy, but that doesn't make any sense. Wouldn't it be like Ma Bois? I don't know. Anyway, I really like my Tick Watch, so it's been doing me fine for my basic level of fitness tracking. Wrapping up big news articles, we don't have to spend too much time on. Oh, Mango Bandito, do the North still run normal or were the servers servers killed? The servers were killed. All of the features of the Focals are gone. And it, like I said, it makes me really sad. So anything that was server side has been removed and the app doesn't really function anymore. And it's just awful. Like these things are just, they're going to be museum pieces for me. I'm so, so excited to be using them. The Focals, if you'll pardon the tangent, because I've said this on a couple different podcasts and in the two videos that I did on them, nothing has felt more futuristic than wearing a heads up display. And I don't like the idea that only Samsung, Apple, and Google, and maybe Microsoft can control the future of the tech that we get. Because face computers and heads-up displays will be disruptive. So a company like Samsung or Apple has every incentive to slow play that until like there's no room left to squeeze out profit from their current business model. And something like the Focals, when you really got them fitted, got to use them, there were some obvious criticisms to be levied at them, but they were so well polished. For a boutique-y little company, the experience was so much nicer than most smartwatches and right up at eye level. So that's what makes me sad. I feel like we could be improving a lot faster if these companies would really put some stuff out there and start beta testing in public and working out the kinks on this. But that's not going to happen because that's not going to be as profitable. DTNL. So I now have a heavy pair of glasses. Yes, I do. It's time to get sad, everyone. Dave Burns. Dave Burns, but the ring scratches my phone. I loved that criticism. I saw that in a couple videos. Like, oh, this ring, because you control the focals through a ring, and there's like a little D-pad on the ring. And that sounds clumsy, but it works so well. I mean, again, you don't have to touch your face to operate them. They just click through, and you could wear gloves if you wanted to work the ring through some gloves. But I love people complaining like, oh, this ring scratches my phone, instead of complaining that your phone is so fragile that it can be scratched by this ring. No, it needs to be made out of a different material, or maybe it should be capacitive and work worse. I don't want it to scratch my phone. All right, we got to wrap up news. I don't want to spend all, like I said, I want to talk about more tech stuff. this is coming by way of Paul Theriot. Some encouraging news out of Microsoft. I'm hoping that this demonstrates yet another pivot towards unifying Microsoft products and services, but something to keep an eye on. Windows rocked by major reorg. Paul Theriot. Theriot.com and Petrie.com have viewed internal Microsoft documents describing a massive reorganization of its Windows business, which is now called Windows Plus Devices. Ooh. Quote, today we are building upon our momentum and the company is leaning on us to lead the next phase of the Windows vision for our ecosystem with over 1 billion customers and counting. In taking the next step, our focus is on product making, aligning experiences across the company, and inspiring our broad and vibrant ecosystem. Our desire is to create end-user pull across all segments of the business. As we move forward, I'm energized and passionate about the incredible opportunity in front of us. This is from Panos Panay. So basically, there was a harder split. There was a harder division in Microsoft products and services. And there was like a Windows team and then the Surface team and the Xbox team and the Office team. And then there were other smaller little pockets within Microsoft that were responsible for apps and different services. And so with Satya Nadella making server side, making services a much bigger play and a much bigger part of the Microsoft DNA, we saw a lot of this stuff pivot. Well, I think the writing's on the wall for the next phase of computing. You know, we're looking at Apple using ARM instruction sets for Apple Silicon. Apple fans get real cranky when you call Apple Silicon ARM, but it's ARM-based. It's an ARM-based processor. And it's akin to what goes into phones and tablets will eventually be making its way into more proper desktops and laptops. We know Microsoft has an initiative to get Windows working on ARM. We know Chromebooks can work on x86 or on ARM. So some focus internal at Microsoft to make Windows function better on specific pieces of hardware is a very Apple-style initiative. We should be looking forward to better synergy, better services, getting Windows apps up off the ground because the Microsoft App Store is not the best. But it's in getting the next phase of Windows computing to streamline in a way that it makes sense for consumers. The biggest challenge has always been, you know, with such a huge user base across such a broad range of devices, you know, Microsoft's biggest benefit is also its Achilles heel, and that's legacy support for older applications and getting businesses and governments on board updating their content for something that's a little bit more modern. But this is what I would consider to be one of the first steps in making a transition like that. You know, the people who are responsible for making some of the flagship Microsoft laptops and tablets having a bit more influence over what happens next for Microsoft software. And we're seeing that Microsoft is not picky. Like, they're not choosy. Anyone who wants to run one of their products if you have an iPhone, if you have an Android phone, if you have like a Chromebook, if you have a MacBook, if you have a Windows machine, they don't care. They just want you using Office. Like, you're good. Just check that out. It's fine. So we'll see. I'm positive on a step like this, but again, it's such a huge ship steering Microsoft. Hopefully that, that transition is efficiently managed. I gotta say, Microsoft has been interesting to follow for how nimble they've made some of these moves. Like Windows 10, what it resembles today, with numerous teething pains. Let's not, like, you know, gild that lily. There's still some major issues that need to be sort of sorted out. But look at where we went from Windows 7 to Windows 8. And like a big boxed product, update operating system. That whole retail idea of software being a product to be sold as like an individual widget, completely gone. And now everything is so much more fluid. And I've been really happy with Office, some of the more recent changes to Office. So again, this could be pretty cool. This could be good. Walt Samarista, since we're talking about Microsoft, I like their partnership with Samsung where you can use Android apps on Windows. My frustration with that is there's nothing unique to Samsung where we couldn't be utilizing services like your phone on any other phone. And I get it. It's Microsoft and Samsung are working together. Samsung benefits from Microsoft software. Microsoft benefits from Samsung experience in making hardware. And we're eventually going to get this stuff kind of out to other manufacturers. But if I were Microsoft, I would at least throw some token, some completely, weak, barely effective nod, some kind of resource or branch or hand, to extend a handshake out to LG. Right now, if you want a glimpse of what might make the Surface Duo compelling, it's the LG Velvet and the LG V60. And LG is paving the way for this type of multi-screen, more modular, fluid app design, app portability, services, and pen touch computing in ways that are so much more compelling than what Samsung is doing. But Samsung has a $10 billion marketing department, so Microsoft will do better with Samsung in the long run. But I don't think Microsoft and Samsung as a partnership will really benefit both companies as much as they think it will. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. From Packinator56, hey Juan, why do most tech YouTubers underestimate mid-range Snapdragon processors by saying only keep phones with mid-range chipsets for 1 or 2 years and no more because it will be too slow by then? It's not like the processors will magically slow down in a 2-year span. It's a very interesting question. So you got to go back a little ways. A lot of us in the tech commentary space, especially folks closer to my age, fall into very consistent patterns on how we evaluate hardware. And it's difficult for us to go back and re-examine some of our previously held ideas. So if you're looking at mid-range chipsets and you've been in this game as long as I have, you have some very painful memories of how phones with Snapdragon 614s aged. We're talking going back to like Moto G3s and Moto G4s. Those phones were, I was very selective in who and how I would recommend those devices. And as software gets heavier, we don't see the same effort being placed on efficiency and optimization. So oftentimes we get these cool new features, but they're sort of stapled onto the existing framework of how our phones operate. And then we just count on a more powerful chip every year to run that software better. The Android One program, I think, is a spectacular failure for helping streamline and improve the performance of lower powered devices. Like, you're supposed to be getting these updates, and you know, there's a certification process, and there's a narrower band of hardware requirements. So you can't like slap Android One on something that doesn't meet these criteria, but it doesn't really accomplish better optimization. And it's painfully clear when you pick up a mid-ranger chipped phone from another manufacturer and then you pick up a Pixel, how much work and effort goes into making that Pixel feel like a substantially more expensive device. But to your point, one of the things that we as tech reviewers should be doing a better job is doing a better job of is going back to revisit some of these mid-rangers. My mind was blown the first time I picked up a Huawei Nova with a 625. So I had every expectation of hating that phone, loving the design because it was like a little baby Nexus, right? You know, that metal, the kind of Bender Rodriguez, you know, vent for the camera module. I loved the look of it, and I'm pulling it out of the box and I'm looking at the specs, and I'm a learned tech reviewer, and Snapdragon 625, this is going to be garbage. And I can pick up that phone today and have a reasonably decent experience. Shoot 4K video. It's a snappy, punchy little processor. Still performs really well for your basic daily driver activities. I mean, like that phone's what, 4 years old now? So the problem is overcoming these typical gadget nerd types of criticisms and the longer memories we have for shopping in the mid-range. And again, it's an area where techies have fallen behind. I think average consumers, these people that we claim to protect, have all moved on. Like, they get the value proposition of shopping a mid-ranger phone. You know, the A51 and the iPhone SE totally saved Samsung and Apple's financials this year. It wasn't the more expensive premium phones. It was the $300 to $500 tier that kept those companies looking better on a spec financial sheet. So it's really, you don't get as much traffic on those videos on YouTube. Tech enthusiasts want to hear about Ferraris. They don't want to hear about Corollas. Your ad metrics and your ad revenue plummet on YouTube when you're not only talking about the most popular trending topic options. So we've got to do better in finding ways to monetize videos so that we can spend time properly revisiting this kind of hardware. Sorry, I'm way behind. The Ron and Otter. Yeah, those chipsets were horrible. It's kind of mind-blowing the progress it's made. From the 625 on, we're in so much better territory. The 630s were good. The 660s are excellent. And now these 730s and 765s are still probably more horsepower than the average consumer needs to play Candy Crush and check in on Facebook. Like, we're doing fine. And Mango Bandito, the 600 series seemed to replace the 400 and 700. It's great for almost all consumers. So we're starting to see Snapdragon 400s in $100 phones, you know, like 100 to 150, those cool pads that I reviewed last year. But yeah, when you see a TCL 10L on sale for $212 with a Snapdragon 660, like, that's a brutal competitor. It's shockingly good. And $350 for a Pixel 4a with a Snapdragon 730. Come on. I mean, just insane. Really, really good stuff. So that's it for news. And we need to take a minute here to plug the subreddit. Let me get this out of the way here. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. Some subreddits are like a fan community hangout. Some subreddits are all about upvoting news. So, you know, different news topics that the hosts want to cover for the week. I have a major concern over media literacy and how platforms like Facebook and YouTube manipulate content, the order of content, to promote popularity and time on site to the detriment of smaller content creators. So my subreddit is a platform to try and help encourage people to share and to promote stuff that deserves more attention. So if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see producers that you will likely never have suggested to you in your YouTube feed. You know, you click on a video and they're like, hey, cool, if you liked this video, then you should only watch these videos from people with 10 million subscribers. My subreddit is very much the opposite. So every week we talk about what the top submissions were. And for my own subreddit, it is not often that I am at the top of my own subreddit. This, ladies and gentlemen, and I feel like this is okay because like this is the week leading up into my birthday. So this is just like a birthday present, right? This isn't like a normal occurrence. But not only did my Pixel 4a top my subreddit this week, it topped it twice. Hey, Matt Tyler, does this look good? You like them apples? I'm sure you do. Dave Burns, damn it, we didn't bully hard enough. Matt Tyler, that's it, we riot. My Pixel 4a video is not only good, good enough to lead, it's doubly good. So now I'm excited. Like, now I'm not going to be happy until I can get one of my videos to lead in the top three. That's the new challenge. I love this. I'm so happy. Okay, Pixel 4a, who is this even for? I mean, it came from my blog, the SomeGadgetGuy.com link is shared, and then also someone shared directly from YouTube. So it got voted up twice, and it managed the both of them to get to the same, get to the top of the subreddit. But number three coming in is the LG Velvet 5G, the best dual screen phone right now. USA launch on AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, coming by way of TK MyBay. TK Bay taking the number three spot. Then we've got LFA Reviews checking out the Samsung Galaxy Buds Live. We've got Spectacular Gadget. Sorry, I stumble on that name every time, and it's such a clever YouTube name. Spectacular Gadgets checking out the Pixel 4a. 3,300 subscribers, putting out some really quality content. We've got Nord versus LG Velvet coming by way of Fandroid. My buddy Nick Gray making some great videos. LG Velvet and camping in Michigan by way of Benefit of the Dowd. Adam Dowd hitting the top 10. We've got Preston's Thoughts. Preston has, 221 subscribers, and he's leading in the top 10. Disappointing iPhone 12 leaks. We've got Josh Vergara checking out the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra, an unboxing video. And then rounding out the list of the top stories of the week, we've got Galaxy Buds Live coming from my buddy Anabong Etta, Bored at Work. And Samsung Unpacked Reactions, I'm ... speechless by Jason over at Painfully Honest Tech. And that's the full roundup, the top stories from reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And I am increasingly proud of this little community finding content creators. And it's not always just you got to have a little channel or you're only going to come here to self-promote. So, you know, the mission of Glowing Rectangles is to try and boost and share to share more attention for something that we think deserves more attention. We lose content creators on the regular. YouTube is becoming a grind. It's really hard to build an honest community, like people that are engaged and contributing to the conversation. And so every week I show up at my own little subreddit and I see these awesome submissions. I'm seeing more upvotes. I'm seeing more comments. I'm seeing more articles, you know, self posts, everything. And that's exactly the kind of honest, organic growth that I'd hoped we'd see. And it's starting to realize it now. So it's always really exciting to check it out. If you haven't been, please check it out. I say this every week. I'm almost positive you'll find someone that you've never seen before, and they'll become one of your favorite tech commentators or tech topic reviewers. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Give it a spin. I think you'll dig it. And as always, we can always use more submissions, more upvotes. Don't be stingy with the upvotes. The whole point of this subreddit is to try and help promote content and a more diverse conversation on these gadgets. And then also just sharing. If you choose to share someone using your social media, something like that, it's always a huge benefit. It's always a huge perk. So we greatly appreciate trying to bring more people to this kind of conversation. Matt Tyler, hey, hashtag TK Our Bay. We have a t-shirt concept, so you lose one. Simon says, Hypno, winner, winner, glowing rectangle dinner. Mm-mm. I love it. No, I'm excited. My Pixel 4a video was good. I mean, like, I'm proud of me. That came out really well. So I'm fine with it showing up twice. I'm pretty rad. All right, we got to get into the gadget block here. Where did we leave off there? Okay. I'm increasingly anxious, but also tentatively very excited for the Surface Duo. I'm looking forward to any company with the resources and the sort of hardware team, the design language, to try and execute some new flavor of a phone in 2020. Like I said, I do not want this conversation to be so lopsided that only Apple and Samsung deserve to have experimental phones. And so I've been increasingly frustrated with the tone of the conversation surrounding the Surface Duo. It's going to be too expensive. It's not going to be powerful enough. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. Camera, camera, camera. I'm on board. These new leaks, we've got new leaks of renders of the Duo coming out, and it's supposedly going to go to AT&T. We should be getting more word on this very soon. I know it cleared the FCC, so it's getting close that this could be a viable first generation Surface product coming out soon. But by way of Windows Central, Evan Blass shared some of these leaks, and Windows Central followed them up. And this thing just looks so darn clean. You know, I said this in my BlackBerry videos. There's this idea of a phone made for grownups, and the Surface is fitting that business corporate idea so well. And you look at how sharp and how clean and how well considered this design is, and it looks like a little baby Surface. I am silly stoked to see how this thing might perform in real life. And I need to throw some shout outs. Like, we can complain about pricing and we can complain about what it may or may not have or the cameras, blah, 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 blah. But so far, no company has really gotten this hardware spot on. And when we look at like this hinge design, this is going to be a first, a true permanent swivel hinge that wraps all the way around a device. We have a part-time dual screener on LG where the screen can go sort of, you know, from the front and you can wrap it all the way around to the back. This is kind of a big deal, building this as a permanent solution into the body of a phone. So I'm really anxious to give that a spin and see if this hardware really accomplishes what Microsoft is setting out to do. The other part of this, which is so critical, which again, I'm really excited and I'm really anxious to be checking out, is this hardware sounds outdated until you look at competing options like the Velvet. So a lot of people concern, oh, it's going to have a Snapdragon 855. Oh, who could use that? And you're like, yeah, but the 855 still curb stomps the chipsets in you know, the Velvet and the Nord. And so don't be a chipset junkie. Yes, it would be great if Microsoft were pushing an 865 and the 5G radios and all that stuff. But there's something really compelling about the idea of using last year's premium chipset, which I guarantee you, the people complaining about this are not maxing out a Snapdragon 855. There are precious few people really using their phones to a degree that they're maxing out the Snapdragon 845. So I think we can calm that down. You know, if you were to give me a Snapdragon 845, it would take me a little bit longer and I would still get all of my work done rendering high quality 4K video from my phones and still playing graphics intense games. I've got a Razer Phone 2 over there that is still a little nicer for playing games than a number of current phones out. So I'm not impressed by this.
It's too expensive. I can't fathom the differences in material costs and making a beautiful hinge design with minimal bezel separation between two AMOLED screens. Oh, that doesn't cost anything. All we need to complain about is the Snapdragon 855. Blah, blah, blah.
The last one woke. The 765 is not more powerful than the 845. It trades blows back and forth, but it loses in a lot of graphics benchmarks. I have a series of videos called Buy the Benchmarks. You should check it out. Two Spirits, isn't Google coming out with a foldable Pixel next year? I have not seen any qualified rumors on that. You know, like, again, we've been talking about what Google might do, especially for Android, in supporting screen form factors that change, you know, making Android more resolution and aspect ratio aware. But I haven't seen any credible leaks yet that would suggest to me that next year they're going to take that big of a plunge. After this year, and especially using the 4A, what I hope is that we see a refining year from Google. You know, so the 4A and the Pixel 5, you know, global situation that we find ourselves in, interrupted their strategy pretty bad. And so from the Pixel 5 to whatever we get next year, I hope is that time that they can spend rebuilding and executing properly. Gary the Fireman, did someone say Razer Phone 2? from Braden, the foldable Pixel showed up in the code base and they confirmed that they were testing foldable products, but there's no credible leak for the foldable Pixel yet. So, I mean, that makes sense. Google should have hardware in-house to test some of the changes they're making to Android as an operating system. That's very similar. I mean, a couple months back, we had a conversation with Jason Gurdon of TCL, TCL Communications, and they're doing the same thing. TCL has been showing off some of the most radical prototypes for foldable and rollable and scrollable phones. They haven't put anything out consumer-facing yet because it's kind of foolish to really try and put out a consumer-facing foldable phone if you're claiming it can really replace a standard regular phone. That's kind of silly. We all rationally should understand that it can't. It is a flex wallet statement phone. Even from Samsung, they don't call their foldables, you know, work companions or consumer lifestyle phones. They're statement phone. You're making a statement that you spent a lot on this phone. That's what foldable phones currently are. So I don't think Google has any plans, or at least I really hope they don't, to push foldable hard next year, but they should absolutely be testing how Android works on foldable screen designs. Root Knight, speaking of radical prototypes, I want to see LG scroll prototypes. I'm really anxious about that. One other little bit of gadget news, a little bit of a bummer, but before we move on to Sam, actually, no, sorry, we've got two more stories. Sorry, guys. Gadget Block does have a bit of news in it, too. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but Huawei. The Huawei Mate 40 will get a Kirin chipset, but it's going to be the last Kirin-powered flagship. So the Kirin 1000 is expected to be announced at IFA. Oh, I'm sorry. This article coming by way of GSM Arena. Who wrote this up? Peter. Peter wrote this up. Good job, Peter. Huawei. There we go. The Kirin 1000 chipset is expected to be announced at IFA in early September before making its debut on the Huawei Mate 40 lineup. It's a 5-nanometer chip fabbed at TSMC. Will be based on the Cortex A78 CPU core. However, the Mate 40s will be maybe the last phones to use a Kirin chipset. So the US will block TSMC from manufacturing chips for Huawei starting in mid-September. Before then, Huawei will be able to secure enough chips for 15 million Mate 40s, which the company feels will be enough. But after that supply runs out, it will need to find a new source of chipsets, which the CEO, Richard Yu, did not cover in his talk regarding this, the situation. So Huawei managed to sidestep Samsung in the first half of 2020 in number, in just brute force, the number of smartphones shipped. It's interesting to see. This has been a frustrating story for years since the Mate 10 Pro. We saw the Mate 10 Pro tried to eke out an AT&T deal here in the United States. Since the Mate 10, we have been batting this ball back and forth between the USA and China, playing political hopscotch, and Huawei has been one of the biggest and most visible targets of this, you know, sort of government showdown between two, you know, mega superpowers in terms of government. This has been really frustrating. As soon as this story launched, there was another story saying that Qualcomm is apparently petitioning the U.S. government to allow them to sell their chips to Huawei. Like, what a funny, you know, coincidence. What convenient timing. You know, we've got Kirin coming down to 5-nanometer and probably some decent performance improvements, and Qualcomm working on their really expensive, you know, their prices are cranking up even higher for next year's Snapdragon, whatever, if it's going to be called the 875. We know prices, component prices are going to be going up higher there too. And wouldn't that be just a great little perk, you know, just a great benefit for Huawei if, you know, they can't make their own chips anymore, but they could buy some from Qualcomm. Wouldn't that be great? And this is what's so frustrating is, we need more competition in this space. Kirin chipsets are great. Samsung could work on improving the Exynos, but as sort of a daily driver chipset, it's a perfectly capable chipset. I was actually a little impressed with the MediaTek, the low-end MediaTeks like the P35. If you're a gadget enthusiast, you don't want one. But you know, the LG Stylo 6, super cheap phone, P35, and I can stream my HEVC Blu-ray rips on a phone where even just 2 years ago, a phone like that would not have been able to play those video files. So our products only get better when we have competition. If Qualcomm has even more power over the smartphone space and they're able to lock in Huawei as a, you know, premier, a world-selling smartphone partner, that's not good for us. That doesn't make our products better. And in fact, it likely makes all of our components even more expensive year over year. So I'm hoping that we see some sort of shift. There is some baby Chinese chip fab that's starting to build, but I believe their current capacity is somewhere around 14 nanometers. So it's a 2-generation step back, you know, where our chipsets hit 10, hit 7, and now Huawei is looking at a 5-nanometer chip. Our Chinese chip fab counterparts are generations behind. But if they continue to iterate, and they've iterated pretty quickly, we could see some kind of, you know, homegrown competitor likely sooner rather than later. Dave Burns, I love when things get worse year over year. The last one woke, the MediaTek Dimensity 1000 is another chip that should have been stronger. And I feel like we saw MediaTek put out some interesting messaging on Dimensity. And I feel like Qualcomm's response was very aggressive in getting manufacturers on board the Snapdragon 700 series. So the first half of the year, we were really lacking 5G options, less expensive 5G options, and mid-ranger tier smartphones. And it took the Velvet and the A71, the Galaxy A71, to start opening that up. But at that time, there was no reason why we couldn't have seen a few more competitors looking at Dimensity. I just feel like there were probably some interesting conversations happening behind the scenes between smartphone manufacturers and Qualcomm to keep Snapdragon as the lead chipset. Walt Samarista, MediaTek or Exynos on 2021 Huawei phones? Place your bets. Everyone reply to Walt. What do you think will be in a Huawei phone in 2021? Do you think it's going to be Exynos, MediaTek, Qualcomm, or do you think they're going to pull a Hail Mary and find some way to continue manufacturing Kirin? Drop some comments and we'll see where we end up. And Braden is saying Exynos for high-end and MediaTek for low-end. Excuse me. I'm going to finish this podcast. My voice is really raw. I have no idea why I'm getting so fuzzy here. But while you all vote on that, and I'm going to look through, a lot of people saying MediaTek, Blue Malicious, MediaTek for me. I would really be excited by seeing some options like that. It would be really cool if MediaTek got like a huge partner like Huawei to keep it going. But this is another just interesting tip for tat. This is a story. It was reported on pretty widely, but I caught it on Engadget, written up by Richard Lawler. Apple, iOS games need individual review, which blocks cloud gaming apps. So coming from Microsoft, there we go. This was a quote from a Microsoft PR. Our testing period for the Project X Cloud preview app for iOS has expired. Unfortunately, we do not have a path to bring our vision of cloud gaming with Xbox Game Pass Ultimate to gamers on iOS via the Apple App Store. Apple stands alone as the only general purpose platform to deny consumers from cloud gaming and game subscription services like Xbox Game Pass. And it consistently treats gaming apps differently, applying more lenient rules to non-gaming apps, even when they include interactive content. Apple's reply is, our customers enjoy great apps and games from millions of developers, and gaming services can absolutely launch on the App Store as long as they follow the same set of guidelines applicable to all developers, including submitting games individually for review and appearing in charts and search. In addition to the App Store, developers can choose to reach all iPhone and iPad users over the web through Safari and other browsers on the App Store. So this is actually really interesting timing, because if you caught my crazy super long live stream when Tim Cook, Jeff Bezos, Sundar Pichai, and Mark Zuckerberg were testifying before a House subcommittee, a judiciary committee. There was one really telling exchange from Tim Cook where he was getting pressed on the idea of App Store guidelines, policy, and consistency. And he actually did kind of get a little tripped up when he was being asked about Apple App Store policy. You know, like, well, you take a commission. He's like, yes, we all take a commission. And you treat every app fairly. We treat every app fairly. And then some apps can have different commissions. Well, no, all apps are charged the same commission, except for these apps. Correct. Except for some apps that meet certain guidelines, we can change the rules for those apps. Oh. That would be sort of a contradictory assessment of how the App Store does business with all of the developers and licensees out there. At the same time, Apple has just recently killed a bunch of contracts for Apple Arcade. So Apple is looking at Arcade as a service, and they've been looking at user engagement, and they've determined that the problem with Apple Arcade is that they don't have enough engaging return games, like games that really kind of click that addictive, I need to get my fix Jones from players. So instead of trying to improve the diversity of the catalog or bring in more mainstream gamers or console gamers, you know, like really good content or story-driven content or, you know, puzzle-solving mechanics that take you through one narrative. They really want more Candy Crush-style titles. So your Apple Arcade, tons of contracts just got killed unceremoniously. Apple just booted them. And now, if you have an Apple Arcade subscription, you're probably going to see more action puzzlers. You know, gem swaps and match threes, and that's what Apple is looking at for gaming. Their stance here absolutely deserves a very critical eye from regulators. I completely agree with Microsoft's assessment. There are so many subscription-style platforms available on app stores. Book subscription, news subscription, music subscription, movie subscription. And I guarantee you that Netflix does not have to verify every single movie on its platform as being a verified individual piece of media or content for iPhone users and iPhone subscribers. I cannot imagine a world where Netflix has hired a team of developers and lawyers to vet every single piece of media individually for Apple to greenlight to verify that content can be on an iPhone. That does not make any sense. Packenator 56. I'm sorry, I'm probably mispronouncing your handle. Apple's arguments against Xbox xCloud are stupid. Apple just does not want any competitors to Apple Arcade because Apple Arcade is already doing poorly. What's next? Hulu because Apple TV is not engaging enough. Kyle Ruggles, curated. Thank you. That was one of the words I was looking for. No. Oh, do I have? Oh, I don't think I have my little iPhone over here. Is it over there? I could look it up. I'm not going to. I was like, you know, Apple has very strict guidelines on things like adult content on their various platforms and services. And I wonder, can someone out there, if you have an iPhone handy, because my iPhone is not handy, you can look up, where do Lars von Trier films end up? Like, can you buy Nymphomaniac or Antichrist on the Apple, on the iTunes movie store? I wonder if those movies show up. I would imagine that they would, in some sort of adults only or, NC-17. They're properly rated by the MPAA if you have any kind of protection on there. But I'd be curious, you know, like, how close can we push into, like, really out there content that might show up on a Netflix but would not be approved for the iTunes movie store. So, Blue Malicious. Lars von Trier is a head trip. I have a very strong love-hate relationship with Lars von Trier. Breaking the Waves is basically all of his movies are kind of soul-gutting except for The Five Obstructions. So if you want to watch the only somewhat happy film from Lars von Trier, I would highly recommend watching The Five Obstructions. Everything else is really properly soul gutting and gut wrenching. But yeah, I gotta say this future, I'm actually writing an editorial and I think I might pitch it to Game Crate, the Newegg subsidiary that writes about gaming. The biggest problem with mobile gaming isn't the games. There are some amazing games that you can install directly. It's the app stores. App store policy seems to encourage the lowest common denominator, worst monetization mechanics. And I feel like Apple is trying to protect that. Because as soon as xCloud really starts picking up some steam, as soon as xCloud starts picking up some momentum, it's it's a huge, huge disruption tactic for how we normally game on our phones. Why own a Switch and a phone and a tablet and a computer and a console when a good chunk of consumers, not all of them, we have some huge infrastructure to sort out for game streaming. A lot of people are left behind in this digital divide, but a lot of your consumers who would normally be entertaining more expensive purchases, your phone is powerful enough. Your phone is more powerful than it needs to be for game streaming. The tech demos that I've run on Stadia are very compelling. NVIDIA wants to be in this space. Microsoft has all the servers to point towards server-side gaming, just making gaming another service that can be rendered somewhere else. It's a big disruption point. Google was correct. They just didn't have the infrastructure to pull it off. Microsoft has a catalog. They can do this really well. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay, either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions. And of course, any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos. But if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
DTNL, Steam, insert Horatio Kane taking off sunglasses. Yeah! from Nam, do you think xCloud will kill Stadia? No. I don't think xCloud is going to kill any other service. Stadia will live or die by Google. If Google wants to put the focus and the resources behind iterating and improving it, Stadia could be awesome. It really could be. It's tough because it got off to a shaky start. We're all really skeptical in the tech industry, and rightfully, Google stepping into gaming like this deserves scrutiny, but the actual application, I was using it on a really mediocre Wi-Fi connection on a Pixel 3a. And I was playing Attack on Titan, and it was great. I know I wasn't streaming in 4K 60 frames per second. It was a 720 game stream, but on a small phone screen on a decent little Bluetooth controller, it played great. And I would have said it would have been indistinguishable from playing on, you know, a lower end Xbox, right? That's potential. It's just Google needs to show that they can focus, actually improve and like iterate on one project and not just, you know, whatever they want to, you know, sort of get distracted by. You know, Google is very, shiny, and they'll run over to some other application. But Stadia proved that this concept has some merit. Now we just need to see who can iterate on really bringing the streaming service to a good catalog with prices that make sense. And once we start chipping away at that, I think Microsoft has the early lead, there's no reason why this can't grow beyond Microsoft, though. I mean, I made that joke, the winky face with Steam. I would pay $15 a month to Steam to play my entire Steam catalog anywhere I have a data connection. Like, that's a no-brainer. I've been doing business with Steam for so long. Do some server side and let me play those games on low end hardware. Or, you know, like if my wife's in the office and she wants to, you know, kind of keep plugging away at some of her fantasy exploration games, like that's her lunch break. She could totally do that in a Chrome browser, right? You know, like no brainer. Kyle Ruggles, did they fix the latency? Latency on Stadia hasn't been bad. What we need to figure out is latency for co-op and competitive gaming. I believe, it is my argument that in 5 years, Battle Royale and competitive gaming will be better server side. Because you're rendering and producing the game on one big server. Everyone is on the same platform. Everyone is on the same hardware. And your latency is determining, you know, connections to your controller inputs. And that's it. I believe that will be better. It's going to be way worse when it launches. But it will be better in the long run than everyone locally producing different versions of that game, different quality, different graphics, different monitor resolutions, and that telemetry data being sent from a locally generated source to a server that then coordinates everyone's individual position, I think will be a poorer experience in 5 years. That's my prediction. I'm putting that out there. I will donate $1,000 to a charity of my choice if that proves to not be true in 5 years. But regardless, I really like this idea of making gaming a service, looking at a Netflix style model, and making that a competitive option against console and PC gaming. It's got merit. It's got potential. I really feel like this is silly things to overlook. And Apple Arcade is not going to improve the reputation of gaming on Apple devices. Not if they're looking for more Candy Crush style gaming. From Braden, Microsoft, Nvidia, Google, and Amazon is rumored to be playing in this. I think Steam will be one of the last. I think Steam and Epic will be very, very late to this market. But when they do, there's going to be an infrastructure where more of their customer base should be able to jump on. I think Steam will play this very conservatively. They'll let Microsoft and Nvidia and Google take the big early teething pains. And then they'll lease some extra server time. They'll set up some extra data servers, and they'll be able to onboard their own customers with a more polished service, you know, later. Again, I'm talking in 5 to 10 year windows here, but this could be huge. And that's exactly, you know, like, again, if Steam wants more money from me, this would be a really easy way to do it. So, who wants to talk about some Samsung stuff? Did anyone watch Unpacked? Was that a thing? Did that happen? I don't know. Was there any news there? Anyone? Samsung? No. Dave Burns? No, not me. Okay. Blue Malicious, that lovely Note 20, that is fantastic in all ways. I am honestly more upset about the Note 20 than I was expecting to be. I know I've got a reputation as being the LG guy, but it's been this, you know, multiple year long mission ever since leaving Pocket. Now, one of the major things I've been trying to accomplish is being more upfront about the tools I really use. So when one company is making hardware more for me, that is what I'm going to show as I talk about other products and services, because that's literally how I get this stuff done. And also, like, let's be honest, if I'm fronting LG, you should be pretty confident I'm not rolling in any cash. You know, like, LG does not help my profits at all as an online content creator. So when I do comparisons and I say, like, hey, I'm doing this and that's why this tool set works for me, and this is why Samsung has sort of fallen behind on a lot of these aspects, you know, and not in any small degree, like, losing the headphone jack hurt me bad. That becomes a more driving part of my commentary, but it makes me so sad because I used to live out of Galaxy Notes. I would consider myself to be a top tier smartphone power user. in the strictest sense of I game a lot on phones and I try to push phone hardware to replace laptop style use. When I go to trade shows, I no longer bring my nice camera and a laptop. I bring the most powerful phone I can to shoot vlogs and product videos and edit and render directly from the phone that shoots that content. I feel I am a rare niche of smartphone consumer, smartphone user in that regard. But the Notes used to be the only options for everything. I want to scribble notes while I'm at a press briefing, flip that phone around, shoot some video, looking at my notes and try and, you know, work out what the video is going to be about, drop that into a video timeline, upload a 1080p video directly from the phone. Note or nothing. And around the time of the V30, from V20 to V30, once LG really started cleaning up their audio tools and their manual video capture, I was pretty split. Especially like leaving Pocket now, right around Galaxy S9, Note 9, the sort of peak Note. You could have swayed me one way or the other. It could have been a Note, could have been an LG. I like the LG better for music listening, the quad DAC, that stuff's really cool, but the Note's got a better, you know, sort of collection of software platforms, and I love the S Pen. Note 20 is such a disappointment. Note 20 feels like such a cynical product. Samsung, from 2017 to 2019, spending $10 to $14 billion a year on advertising. Samsung spends more on their brand advertising than LG's entire smartphone manufacturing, distribution, support, and advertising in total. That's the disparity. So then we get to a Note 20 at $999. And you're like, yeah, you got to pay for those ad campaigns somehow. There are some perks on the Note 20. It's not like it's a completely unusable phone. But $999 feels like a pain point. And when you really break down the differences between the Note 20 and the Note 20 Ultra, the Note 20 increasingly feels like a compromised phone to encourage you to step up to the more expensive Note 20 Ultra. You could have the regular Note 20, but if you're already going to be putting it on contract for $45 a month, why not just bump that up to $50 a month and get the Ultra? It's only $5 more. You know, because I am that dork who will upsell my popcorn when I go to a movie, but $5 extra a month, oh, that's not so bad. But man, you're paying full retail for that. I have a hard time with $999 for the Note 20. And it's frustrating because there are some things, there's some ideas that I actually really like. The notion that the Note 20 is a polycarb back, I would really love for more manufacturers to be experimenting with other materials other than glass. But we've all agreed that glass is a premium product tier, and making the Note 20 back plastic is cynical. There's a great video from TechAlter, how smartphone manufacturers choose components. And he's comparing the Velvet against, I forget what phone, maybe a Realme, you know, again, another really, really low cost option. And he's saying, you know, like, look at this phone. This phone is designed to look good online, but you put it in your hand and it's plastic and it feels lighter. And there are some other things that are kind of problem. But when you're looking at the spec sheet and you're ordering online, this phone looks way cooler than the Velvet, you know, price performance. But then you pick up the Velvet and it's really nicely refined and it's built really high quality. And this is a phone that's going to impress if you walk into a carrier store. The Note 20 feels like the cynical, we're going to put this up on a website and it's going to look indistinguishable from another phone that's made out of nicer materials, but you won't know that until you buy it. So, Matt Tyler, exactly. If I knew someone looking for a Note today and didn't want the Ultra, the Note 10 Plus is the one I would recommend because it's cheaper and effectively the same phone bar the camera, and it's more premium materials. And a DTNO. Yeah, the tech alter video was between a real me and the Velvet. I kind of feel the same thing with the Nord. You know, the Nord is a very spec-heavy phone for a specific kind of Android enthusiast. It does not reach that kind of all-rounder for me. Like, I don't have the same confidence in recommending the Nord like some of these other phones, like an iPhone SE or a Pixel 4a. But there are some people out there, especially looking at chipset, price, performance, Nord is going to be a great fit. But I worry, you know, like if I were to put that phone into someone else's hands and they kind of play with it, and it's kind of plasticky and the build feels a little more fragile and there are other compromises and maybe the screen tint goes green. You know, like that's not as broad a consumer option just because of the price. But now we're looking at the Note 20 at $999, and I care about the specs. I care about the storage getting cut in half from the Note 10 at 128 gigabytes of storage with no expandable storage, that the Note 20 doesn't have an SD card slot. I care that Notes no longer have headphone jacks. Such a big phone, there's no reason to not have a headphone jack. The Note should be an everything in the kitchen sink kind of phone. And the Note 20, oh, in the battery. Yeah, sorry, I'm scrolling through the Samsung website. They're like, ooh, look at this. The battery is 100% in the fast charging. Yeah, but the battery is so small for a big, powerful 5G compatible phone. You have fast charging, but it's, you know, it's what? It's 15% smaller than a V60. Again, I know I'm the LG guy, but you know, V60 launched at $799 full retail, $200 cheaper than the Note 20, and is better in almost every comparable measurement than what you're going to do on this Note. I'm just so disappointed. Like, I don't know how to like qualify this. Every video I work on, I use my Note 4. This is my teleprompter screen. But I still, because I'm using this on every single video where I write a script, I'm still regularly pulling the Note 4 out and taking some photos with it. And, you know, maybe I pop the S Pen and I jot some notes. Like, this phone is still regularly, lightly, but regularly used in my gadget rotation. And I just recently got a new battery for it, and it brought this back up into, like, it felt like a new Note. Just software has gotten way more demanding, so it's not fast, but it's still capable. I lived out of this phone. It never had a case on it. I was brutal to this device. I shot so much content on it, so many videos, so many photos, did as the hardest work I could on it for years, even through the Note 5 days. Like, this was the phone that carried me through the Note 7, where we all remember what happened in the Note 7. I could not share more love for this phone, where this phone felt like an evolutionary leap over the other phones of its day. Like, you know, from the quad HD screen to the 4K video recording, the removable back, upgradable storage, everything. This phone was such a monster. The IR blaster, if you wanted to use it as a universal remote. Everything about this phone was head and shoulders above the competition. New Notes feel like afterthoughts. They feel like Galaxy S's with S Pen silos. So you suffer smaller batteries so you can fit in the stylus, and that's not exciting. I want a Note that takes the leading edge of whatever Samsung can accomplish and puts it all into one phone. And now I don't think that's what Samsung wants to offer. I think Samsung is looking to try and hold some kind of lead on foldable phones as expensive, fragile vanity pieces, and the Note is going to suffer. The Note is going to be this afterthought from year to year. Or Kyle Ruggles, build a phone like the V10. It's a tank. My V10 was maybe the only other phone in my collection that I treated harsher than my Note 4. And both the Note 4 and the V10, pristine. Like, they look so good, considering how much damage and abuse I put them through. And Gary the Fireman, it has a removable battery, unlike current Samsung phones where it's glued in. I don't know, did anyone see the disassembly, the teardown video from Jerry Rig Everything? Now, LG is not much better. They use some really hard adhesive pads on LG phones. I don't know that they've been using glue, but they're so stuck in there, it's only a little bit better. But when I saw what he had to go through to get the battery out of the Note 20, it was pretty shocking. It was intense. It was multiple pry bars, heat gun, and a suction cup, which basically ruined the battery. It just destroyed the battery to get that out of the phone. I feel like we're at a transition point. I feel like we're at a consumer reckoning. And I feel like Samsung had these products in development at a time where the notion of a $1,000 phone was a bit more palatable as an exciting, expensive premium option. But they kept charging ahead while other manufacturers were looking to pivot. So we think about, like, the Note 20 was probably in a similar development pipeline as the V60. 18 months, 2 years. They were making their early decisions about these products 2 years ago. And LG was already reading the writing on the wall that no one's buying our premium phones until they hit bargain bin clearance sale prices. So we've got to pivot. We can't keep making these spec for spec devices that, that all match the spec sheet or sometimes even exceed the spec sheet of Samsung as competition, but then no one buys them and they all get panned by reviewers because reasons. So the V60 is a very clear departure. We're going to whittle back on some of these specs. We're not going to include all of these bells and whistles, but what you end up with is a monster phone that we can launch at a cheaper price than the V50, which came before it. Samsung has not read the room. A Note 20 with less storage launching at a higher price than the Note 10 is the wrong play. That makes zero sense. The Note 10 at $949 was a terrible deal, in my opinion. The Note 20 at $999 is an even worse deal. Again, I'm not saying this, but McCorcoran 3, V60 crushes Note 20. I didn't say it. I'm the LG guy. So, obviously my opinion can't ever count for anything when we talk about other manufacturers. But McCorcoran is saying something that I think a number of people might agree with. Again, the problem is LG distribution. The V60 is a very compelling phone now in the few markets that you can get it. it's hilarious. Jason Campbell, Samsung is taking a calculated loss on the standard Note 20. They know the industry is slowing down. If that's the case, then it's doubly dumb. If they're taking a loss on the Note 20, selling it at $999, why does the phone exist? The phone only seems to exist if they want the Note 20 to represent a starter tier that encourages you to buy up. It makes me even angrier if Samsung is like, oh, well, we're losing money on this phone. No. No, I don't. Yeah, I'm not there. From Walt Samarista, I was torn by the Note 9 and the V40 2 years ago. I didn't mind importing the V40 from the US, and it was definitely worth it. I feel like so much of that conversation, I've been having these chats with people like on YouTube, like, oh, well, why would you do this when you can get last year's G8? Why would you buy a Velvet? And you're like, that's cool. You're absolutely right. You can buy a G8 real cheap. But because we've been playing that game with LG and pretending that the only real competition is Samsung and Apple, we don't have a G9. G9 got discontinued because LG had to pivot and make a proper consumer-focused mid-ranger that doesn't have all the bells and whistles. That's what happens. I've been saying that for years. You can enjoy it for now. You can get LG super, super cheap. Eventually, they have to change. That's unsustainable. So if you wanted a G9, it's because people only bought G8s and G7s after the pricing completely bottomed out. So that's great. Short term, got some great deals. I'm actually, you know, sort of sitting before you as someone who has taken advantage of some of that super low pricing and budget tier pricing on LG devices. And now you don't have quad DAC in your consumer grade mid-ranger phone. And we're not playing with ultra high screen resolutions. And they're definitely not playing with high refresh rate displays. Lots of cool tech, but this is what happens. So I feel like we could be doing a better service to this conversation by actually acknowledging when a company has good competition. I am not angsty at all about an Xperia 1 Mark II at $1,200. That phone is a $1,200 phone. It makes no excuses for the fact that it's a $1,200 phone. And it is Sony. Japanese design, Japanese authority, Japanese reputation. Like, that is their mic drop phone. It makes perfect sense to me. That phone should never be on any kind of crazy sale, but we should see some cool bundles. Like, you know, buy a $1,200 phone and get some cool Bluetooth headphones. Great. Sign me up. But that phone is a premium product that deserves to land at a premium price tag. And it's sad because LG has made those phones too. But we pretend that they're not worth it enough. And then, you know, you've got stock sitting on shelves. So you eventually got to sell it off and make room for whatever is coming out next. That's not a fun game. And that means that we get what we pay for. Dave Burns, phone nerds are trying to kill smartphones for everyone. McCorquin 3, I hope LG continues dual screen approach, but who knows? Actually, this is something that's garnered them a lot of interest. And again, you got to think about LG wants to improve their reputation when you walk into a carrier store. I'm telling you, watch Tech Alter's video. He is so much more eloquent than I am. But it's such a great breakdown of the psychology behind different consumer demographics. Those of us who are really comfortable shopping online, we're going to be more impressed by a spec sheet and some of the product photography and the look, you know, as it looks through our browser. But when you walk into a carrier store and way off in a dusty corner, you see a phone with two screens. That's going to draw your eye. If way off in the corner was a dusty LG with a 90 hertz refresh rate, you wouldn't blink. It wouldn't register at all. But LG wants you to go over, pick up the phone, look at it. And when you pick up a Velvet, it's going to feel like a much nicer phone than a Galaxy A71 in the same price point. It's going to feel like a way nicer phone than a Realme or a Vivo or a Nord or any of these other devices. That's what LG is trying to accomplish in improving the sort of brand reputation. I think it's a great strategy. It's just marketing distribution. You got to tell people the products exist and you actually got to get them into different regions and different markets. Yeah. And I mean, I just showed it off last night. My cousin and her son have iPhone 11 Pros, and I was doing some mad, trash talking because my cousin Joe, there was some like Twitch contest that was happening. And so, we were asking him, oh, hey, yeah, can you look up this thing? And he was like, no, I can't. I've got to stay on this Twitch stream. And like, you can't look something else up while you stream a Twitch stream. And so he's like, well, no, because of blah, 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 an iPhone. You're like, well, yeah, I know. You can't even split screen. But, well, let me tell you about my LG V60. Because when I want to do another thing, I just pull open this second screen. And both my cousin and her son were like, what is that? But again, it's like it's the blessing and the curse, right? You know, here they instantly see how amazing it would be to have a wallet case with two screens. Blow their minds, right? Like they've never seen anything like that. But that's the problem. They've never seen anything like that. And that's what's so sad. You know, the V50, the G8X, the V60, the Velvet, this is territory for LG that average daily driver consumers are not aware that this stuff exists. But yeah, you know, like a pro phone that can't do two things at the same time. That's totally pro. Galaxy Z Fold 2 looks like it's going to be nicer hardware. Instantly, I'm concerned when I still see that screen gap in between the hinges, even on their really nice promo videos, trying to make this look, you know, like it's not going to be fragile. But this still, to me, doesn't look like it solved the fundamental issue of folding phones being super fragile. Like, I game hard on my phones. I like using a stylus on my V60 and Velvet now. I can't do that on a fold, and it's going to be silly expensive. Like, I'll be really surprised if we're not looking at another $1,999 phone. But I am really happy to see that they fixed the front screen. That was really silly and dumb on the original Galaxy Fold. So that's a nice improvement, getting a closed screen that's not a weird bezeled porthole kind of screen. It should be a decent iteration, but I still don't believe that this is a real consumer product yet. I don't believe that this solves more problems than it creates. A grain of sand is going to ruin your beautiful statement phone. This isn't where I think we should really be trying to push as a viable consumer product just yet. Like, if you were saying that, you know, hey, the Z Fold is a limited edition Google Glass public beta or something like that, that'd be fine. I really don't like this idea of trying to position this to consumers as the real thing that's going to replace your next phone. Kyle Ruggles, yeah, it's a perfect take it to the beach phone. the other one that I think is kind of interesting, let me just pull the screen share back up. I'm really curious to see how Galaxy Watch 3 performs. I might try and grab one of these just because I think Samsung deserves a bit more credit for improving the compatibility of their Galaxy watches with non-Galaxy phones. And I want to try and pair it up with a Pixel and see how it runs. $479 for the LTE version of the Galaxy Watch 3 is a bit much. That's a lot. So I'm probably not going to jump on a Galaxy Watch 3 right away. I don't really have a gadget budget where almost $500 I can just throw at a watch that I know I'm not going to get a ton of traffic on YouTube for. And like I made a joke too, you know, like at $479 as your companion gadget, why not take $350 and treat your Pixel 4a as a pocket smartwatch? Yeah, it doesn't live on your wrist, but you know, if you had a really, really nice $1,000 phone and you wanted a companion communication gadget, maybe just buy a whole other phone instead of a almost $500 watch. It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. I mean, even the Wi-Fi version only is $430. And then this is the other frustrating thing. Let me go back into screen share here for just a second. Let's say you wanted the smaller design. So there's a 45 millimeter bezel and a 41 millimeter bezel. Now, when you look at the Wi-Fi version, is $430. The 41 millimeter version is $449. So it's $20 more. Why is the smaller one more expensive than the larger one? Because it only comes in the LTE flavor. If you have smaller wrists, if you have a daintier or more petite frame, screw you. You can only get the smaller watch in the LTE flavor. Just don't be poor if you're a woman or if you have a smaller frame. Come on, guys. That kind of stuff drives me crazy. If anything, the 41 millimeter is the one that should have both the Wi-Fi and LTE options. And then you can make the 45 millimeter the sort of premier, the bigger solution. You know, well, we needed more room for the larger, you know, screen. So we figure that's the one that is going to be LTE only. I mean, not LTE only, but LTE and Wi-Fi combined. Like, those kinds of pricing games drive me crazy. I just, it's so frustrating. Again, like the Note 20, so much of this just feels like the cynical squeeze to kind of encourage an upsell or to force you into a more expensive product. Not, this is really the price performance that's going to rock your socks because we're Samsung and we're the market leader and we lead. It feels more like this is Samsung, we're the market leader, so this is how we can squeeze you for more cash. Dave Byrne, Samsung thinks they're worthy of behavior of brands like Louis Vuitton or Tiffany's, and none of those brands are worthy of that behavior. But lastly, I think the one that I was most positive on, here, let me go back into screen share. The one thing I had to give Samsung some kudos on for Unpacked, they're the only brand still taking non-iOS tablets seriously. Tab S7. It looks really nice. I'm a big fan of taking mobile hardware and using it to replace traditional laptop style computing. And anything that was making me a little interested was Tab S7. I don't care about all their, Dolby Atmos and AKG tuned speakers. Nah, that's not the gig. It's that they're actually putting some decently powerful hardware behind a premium product. Big battery, nice vibrant screen, stylus support. Tab S7 Plus, hold on, let's see. Snapdragon 865 Plus, 10,000 milliamp hour battery. Yeah, yeah, using a Slate computer. This looks like it could be a respectable performer to the iPads out there. And the thing is, we just need to make sure that we're motivating developers to continue improving apps for mobile and for ARM-based computers. Tab S7 looks like a solid option. Like, I can't point to anything else not running iOS that fits that tier of price performance. I mean, you got to move over to a proper Windows x86 computer. There's no LG tablet. There's no Lenovo tablet. Nothing exists in that tier anymore, where it's a current chipset, a current processor that can do some decent heavy lifting. So that I got to give Samsung some kudos for. Beautiful design, great specs, that I'm feeling better about. So that's good times. Simon says, Hypno, quote, you'd like a tablet, a smartwatch, and a phone? Then, well, that's the souls of your firstborn, secondborn, and your spouse. Do you need accessories? One pet soul per case. So from Pacanator 56, I use my iPad for manga and YouTube mostly. You know, I have a little Huawei MediaPad. Really inexpensive, mid-chip Kirin. It did get like a recent bug fix update, but nothing serious in terms of software support. My daughter uses that to play like Khan Academy Kids and to doodle because it had a stylus. Actually, the stylus is over here because I need to put a new battery in it. Great. Again, I mean, like for low requirements, like you have basic media consumption requirements, a cheap LG, a cheap Lenovo, a cheap Huawei, like these tablets do great. What I'm really anxious to see is will Apple suck all the air out of the room for desktop grade applications? You know, like Photoshop. I want to see DaVinci Resolve on one of these ARM-based tablets. I really hope we can see the Linux flavor of DaVinci Resolve running on a phone connected to a monitor. Like, that would be amazing. Stuff like that. Apple is going to garner way more mindshare for developers trying to push into ARM instruction set x86 replacement software. And if we don't have good hardware to back up alternatives, then Apple stands to really hold court over the next generation of software design. I don't want them to be so indomitable that we can't scratch up some competition. So Samsung in this space, that's going to be cool. Windows on ARM is going to be a big help there too. Chrome OS and Android and whatever comes next out of Google for a mobile operating system. These are the things that we need to see improve and not just pay lip service to. Like, oh, well, I tried Windows on ARM and it sucked. Don't buy it. Like, no, we actually need to dig in and use this stuff. Like, we're going to transition over here. I'm kind of done talking about Samsung. I was super disappointed with this Unpacked. I think it shows. But, you know, I want to see more people like driving their phones. I'm so tired of YouTubers unboxing a $1,300 phone and going, well, you know, like, it's pretty good in the hand and I can open Instagram on it and I can do like my Discord. And I took a couple HDR photos off my porch and you can see the megapixels are pretty good. So yeah, it's like $1,300. What are you doing? Everything that's described in so many of these first impressions videos on Note Ultras could be accomplished at almost to almost the same degree by a TCL 10 Pro, an iPhone SE, or a Pixel 4a. Like, I mean, the joke is, look at the Note 20 at $999 with a plastic back, non-upgradable storage, 1080p, 60 hertz OLED display, and the Pixel 4 with almost all the same specs. At one-third the price. So, yeah, it's I feel like techies have actually fallen way behind. Real quick, I forgot to mention this in the news block. Pixel 4 and 4 XL have been discontinued by Google. I'm a little sad by that, but I'm not surprised. Again, it's when the phones aren't selling well, why would you keep making more of them? And there still is plenty. There are plenty of Pixel 4s out there. If you want a Pixel 4 or a Pixel 4 XL, carriers still have some stock. Amazon still had some stock. They're just really not in stock at Google. But if you're on Project Fi, I think you could still buy one through Google. Someone correct me if I'm wrong there, but you know they're going to be drying up soon. I don't understand why this became such a big deal. Google has a much smaller base of manufacturing. The Pixel 4 didn't sell super well. So why would you keep making it?
It's such a fail. They don't even have the Pixel 5 out yet. What is Google doing?
The phone's not selling. Were you recommending people still buy Pixel 4s? Because these people complaining about the Pixel 4 being discontinued were all the same techies telling people not to buy Pixel 4s. So what are you upset about? I don't understand what the big gotcha is there. There's no continuity?
Oh, the only Pixel you can buy now is a 4A.
And? I'm struggling to, what is the final piece of that where you explain why that's the problem? If you want a Pixel 4, there are still plenty out there for you to buy. They made a bunch of them and they didn't sell very well. So they're there. What? I'm like, someone please, if I'm missing something major in the chat, let me know. But yeah, you stop making phones after a certain period of time, and the Pixel 4, especially the 4 XL, was one of the most underrated and most gamed reviewed phones of last year. Using that phone is still a stellar experience. I love the fluidity of the Pixel 4 XL. Very few products accomplish what that phone does. And it's a monster performer. It doesn't benchmark very well, but it's a beast when you really use it. When you just run a benchmark on it, when you actually do stuff with it, it's still outperforming Snapdragon 865s today. You do not get that optimization, hardware and software synergy on any other platform. But yeah, we're real upset that the 4 and the 4 XL have been discontinued when we were complaining about them not being good enough for the monies. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. I'm going to calm down now because we're going to talk about a good phone. So, really, really late last week, I got my Pixel 4a, took it out of the box. I did not do well. Okay. If you're on the Patreon, I did one of those little Patreon lens videos, taking the little tags off the box and taking it out of the box, and it wasn't really an unboxing. It was 10 seconds long. I don't know if you cared enough to see 10 seconds of unboxing the Pixel 4a, but, I am in love with this phone. The Pixel 4a, like the Pixel 3a before it, has immediately jumped to the top of my list as the North American daily driver recommendation. I'm going through the process of finishing up some of my performance testing, where in a number of heavy lifting showdowns, it's going to get spanked by the iPhone SE. But battery life, display quality, the OLED on the Pixel, the rear fingerprint sensor, the headphone jack, so many quality of life perks that make this the best all-rounder device. It really is. I really feel consumers need to stop looking at premium tier devices if they have meager requirements. We all have family and friends. When you look at what's on their phones, like maybe they have an app to call Lyft and or Uber and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and maybe a couple other like media or entertainment solutions. If I had to pick, the extra horsepower of the iPhone SE does nothing to accomplish any of that usage better. The smaller LCD screen accomplishes none of my multimedia and social media better. It does not have a headphone jack. So the quality of life perks for the iPhone SE are, do I really want wireless charging on a phone with a tiny battery? So the wireless charging is going to wear out that battery faster, and the more powerful chipset is going to drain that battery more aggressively throughout the day to do my daily driver, average consumer, basic use. And that is absolutely not something I think most consumers care about. You know, like that. Well, I need all the horsepower. I need all the giggle flips. Do you? So, like I said, I've been doing some performance testing, rendering video. So I put out that Pixel 4a video. All of the me talking was shot from the rear camera. So I was holding it in a GorillaPod, not in a gimbal, not in a stabilizer. That's in a GorillaPod, handheld, and a 4K, 30 frames per second video. It looks really good. The stabilization is great. I know Pixels supposedly don't shoot good video, but Google stabilization has always been phenomenal. I shot all of the A-roll from the Pixel 4a, and then I shot all the B-roll from the Pixel 3a because I didn't want to intersplice clips from a camera with a supposedly better, from a phone with a supposedly better camera. Like, I didn't want the feel of that video to look like B-roll suddenly got way prettier than the A-roll. And there's a psychological thing that happens. You know, like, I'm telling you about this phone and I shot everything from this phone, and then this B-roll looks and it's like gorgeous and creamy bokeh and all that stuff. I didn't want that to be the hook. So all of the B-roll is shot from the Pixel 3a. Again, it should be a minor step down from the video that the 4a can capture. It looks great. The video looks great. It was edited and rendered in PowerDirector, rendered at 4K quality, 30 frames per second, just like it was shot, 4K 30. The phone can't do 4K 60, but again, $350, I'm not sure who in that tier is really going to be upset about not having a 4K 60 frame per second video option. 128 gigabytes of storage, so it's doubling the Pixel 3a. Battery life has been phenomenal. I've been playing games like Anima, ARPG. It's like a Path of Exile Diablo 2 clone. Plays great. Like, no issues with gaming performance there. I'm going to do some performance testing on the headphone jack. The amp is kind of weak, so no surprises. You're not going to drive, you know, premium studio grade cans. But piece for piece, there are some situations and some scenarios where the Pixel 4a is hanging on to or out competing phones like the Velvet. Again, the Velvet is more powerful. This is a Snapdragon 730 and the Velvet has a Snapdragon 765. But Google software optimization helps a lot. And I still have not encountered another company with as much of a lead in image manipulation as Google. I don't always love the look of their auto HDR, super HDR, awesome, auto awesome photos. But when you tell the phone to edit a photo or edit a video, it punches well above its price tag. Again, the Pixel 4 can outperform Snapdragon 865s for video rendering. It's an entire chipset behind. It's not an 855 plus, it's just the regular 855, and it can beat OnePlus 8s. Same thing here. This is a weaker chipset, but with better image manipulation software optimization, and it can hang with low-cost consumer laptops to render video. It really was not a compromise doing the entire video project on this phone. I shot it that morning. It took me a little bit longer to edit because I had to migrate video from the Pixel 3a. So I used Nearby Share. That took a long time. I would really recommend just using a cable if you have gigabytes of data to move between two phones. The cable was a lot faster. All told, when I finally pushed render, the video, I started shooting at 10 a.m. I shot all of the A-roll and B-roll, edited, and had the video uploaded to YouTube at 2 in the afternoon. And I took a break for lunch so I could eat a sandwich. So from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., whole video done. All of it. All from this phone and the Pixel 3a. And when I pushed render, It's an 8-minute video that took just over 10 minutes to render. So not quite rendering in real time, but not too far from it. So I want you to take a 50 megabit per second 4K video and render it on a cheap laptop. And can you render an 8-minute 4K 30 video on a cheap consumer laptop in under 10 minutes? Because I don't think you'll be able to. I don't think that's going to work. So it's pretty intense, Matt Tyler. But one, it's not a flagship, so it's not good enough. What I'm really encouraged by, I've been working really hard on my YouTube channel to kick out, popularity stands. People that just come to my videos to complain about how no one should buy anything but Samsung or Apple. Like, I just had zero patience for fanboys. Anyone who just goes, nuh-uh, your video's wrong, just gets muted. If you want to contribute, I love good debate. So if you want to come to my videos and critique my testing or bring up some concerns over my conclusions, like, I need that. The whole point of my video existing is not to conclude the conversation. It's to start the conversation. It's why I also host podcasts where, I'm reading through all of your live chats and I'm really trying to get into dialogue, not just, telling you what you should think and what you should buy. But if you're coming just to go like, no, you're biased. Well, you didn't reply to anything in the video and you can't point to what I might have an issue with, but you just need me to be wrong. I'm going to mute that comment. It's been really encouraging that after years of weeding in my YouTube comments, this conversation has gotten a lot more interesting. Like, the techies are starting to get where my family and friends have been for a while. They want to know that a phone around $400 isn't going to be punishing to use. And for the last couple years, that's been accurate. From the original iPhone SE and those, like Axon 7s and Honor 8s, and like, we got real excited about the lesser expensive OnePluses back in the day. And then we kind of took a train ride through Leasetown, where you could own this premium luxury Lexus phone and you only had to pay $35-40 a month. And then we kind of lobster potted up that as a consumer trend. Techies are still there. Techies are still acting like, well, it's not as, or I'm going to do a trade-in. Instead of giving a phone to another family member, I'm going to take the value of that phone and roll it into another new phone at full retail and then not get my value back from that trade-in. But that's smart. I'm saving money that way. Techies are still in that cycle where so many more consumers have been backing off. iPhone XR, iPhone SE, Galaxy A51, Galaxy A71, LG Velvet is getting the most positive buzz I've seen on LG in years. Average consumers walked away from us. And so now I'm trying to drag techies kicking and screaming. I know I'm preaching to the choir. If you're watching my podcast, you've heard me go off on this before, but it's like we're trying to bring some rational consideration to this. And the fact that I'm still seeing people complain, like, oh, the Pixel 4a, Google should have scrapped it. There's no reason. Oh, what's going on? Are they going to do a 5G? Oh, so much confusion. Nah, the Pixel 4a instantly launched as the top-selling unlocked phone on Amazon. It sold out of all of their initial stock, their early launch stock for Amazon and for Best Buy. Like, they're on back order if you want to jump on one now. And it's because consumers grok it. It's the Google label, so it's a Google iPhone for $350. And that's enough. And the fact that I can use it and it doesn't feel any different from a premium phone. In fact, like, gestures feel smoother on the 4A than they do on the iPhone, on the OnePlus 8. Google's software runs better on Google hardware than it does on the OnePlus 8. And the OnePlus 8 is still, I think, a very good buy if you're looking at a more horsepower-driven 5G device. Like, I don't have problems recommending the OnePlus 8 It's not like one phone wins. There are no winners and losers. But for everything that we're supposed to be skeptical about, you know, 5G and all expensive prices, $350. The Pixel 4a is a no-brainer. Simon says, Hypno, my HP gaming laptop can't render an 8-minute 4K video in under 10 minutes. I mean, I really need to try with my Razer and try on DaVinci Resolve. And I think the Pixel 4a would maybe tie my old Razer laptop. Well, to be fair, I've got the Razer with that terrible GTX 970. But I think it would be pretty close. Kyle Ruggles, is it possible to use a phone as a proxy so you could edit on the computer and then the phone does the output? At present, I don't believe so. I think that works one way on PowerDirector, where you can start a timeline on your phone and then import that project into PowerDirector on a PC. I haven't tried, but I don't think it works backwards. I don't think you can do the edit on the PC and then move the timeline back over to the phone. And also, it would be tricky because I don't know of any video platforms where there's a standardized approach to plugins. So if you did a whole bunch of, like, you know, color correction and then transitions and then how that would all work on the PC version, I don't think would be directly transferable back to the phone. Dave Burns too. Why would you want to lease a phone? I like to own my devices. But it's a way of tricking people into stepping up into something that they probably couldn't afford, but they're still going to pay full retail on. Excuse me. It's Thexy Pat. Just like cars, always negotiate the best, lowest deal, then talk about trade-ins. And everyone say hey to the Sentinel 909. Couldn't stick around. Just wanted to pop in and say hi. yeah. This is the perfect from Pacanator. Pacanator? Pacanator 56. I was so surprised when these big tech channels did not understand how and why the iPhone XR sold so well when it was obvious why. The same thing happened with, don't forget, hold these tech channels to some consistency. How many people initially trash talked the Pixel 3a and then the Pixel 3a sold phenomenally well? We can't forget that in Western markets, Pixels outsell OnePluses. You know, LG is the number three smartphone manufacturer in the United States, and it climbed in market share in the first half of 2020. LG bumped up. Not as much as Samsung. Samsung basically cannibalized a ton of the bottom end, but for all that Samsung spends on advertising, they're still only about 25% of the North American smartphone sales. So about 50% of Android is Samsung, but LG grew in the first half of 2020. The Pixel 3a doubled the footprint of the Pixel in Android market share. Like, these aren't difficult concepts to grasp, and yet you still had, like, Lou on Unbox Therapy after the Pixel 3a launched. Like, well, maybe it's because Google's an advertising company. Oh, the phone can't be good because I said it wasn't going to be a good phone. It's not the phone. It's probably because Google advertised it. That's probably why it sold so well. It was hilarious. Route 95, so much backtracking with the 3A. And the same thing happened with the 4A. There is no expiration date. All of these tech nerds going like, oh, well, it's too late. Too late. Everyone in the world who was going to buy a phone already bought their phone. You can't launch a product now. It's too late. Look, what does that mean? Literally every day someone's flipping a phone. There is no launch day. It's the same thing. Like, why I'm still very excited for the Surface Duo, and I'm fine with the Snapdragon 855. We're selling $500 to $600 phones with Snapdragon 765s. There is no right launch day. There is only, did you properly target the consumer demographic for your product? The Pixel 4 ran into some pricing issues because it was a premium handset, and the advantages of the Pixel 4 were not properly communicated to consumers. You saw three cameras on the back of an iPhone, but no one was really showcasing, you know, the fluidity of the Pixel 4 screen and solely and the sort of awareness, the organic awareness of being able to pick up your phone and start reaching for it. So that lost the price battle. And it makes sense why. $350 for a Pixel 4a. This is not difficult to communicate or predict. This is hilarious. Anyone who's still like, oh, I don't know, Google, this is, No. Dave Burns. Something about the ultra-wide camera, something. But again, the iPhone SE is going to be praised for being a $400 64-gigabyte competitor in this space. Oh, but they needed to put an ultra-wide on the Pixel 4a. iPhone SE. DTNL, people don't like spending more for less. The only reason big channels can blabber and easily recommend $1,000 devices is because they ain't paying for the phones. Yeah, if I were buying a phone, it would be an LG V60 or an Xperia 1 Mark II. Easy. I would be really conflicted about the OnePlus 8 Pro, though. The OnePlus 8 Pro rocked my socks on that camera sensor way more than I was expecting. But I would ultimately lean towards the premium phones that have the headphone jacks. They're what I need to get my work done, and I'm not going to mess with dongles. Like shooting an entire video on the Pixel 4a was only as easy as it was because of the headphone jack. So if I'm spending my money on horsepower and services and products and stuff, those are the two. That's what I need to get my work done. If you do not have requirements like I do, I think we can take a much more critical eye at price performance. And these compromises are not deal breakers. Not only are they not deal breakers, I'm not sure many people, even tech savvy people, would notice. I could put an iPhone 8 in your hand and a Pixel 4a in your hand, and I think very few people would realize that one phone was twice as expensive as the other. I think there'd be an expectation that one phone was more expensive. I don't think many people would leap to the idea that one phone was twice as expensive as the other. Simon says, Hypno, $1,000 phones feel better in the hand. True or false? Sentinel909, watch reviewers backtrack on the plastic back Note 20. Well, it kind of feels good in the hand and it's much more durable. I think Samsung's strategy is pretty clear. If you've been on Samsung's approved gadget reviewer list, most of them got Note 20 Ultras. So there wouldn't be a lot of commentary about the $1,000 Note 20. The commentary would focus on the Ultra, and then there'd be a passing comment. And most of what makes this Note 20 Ultra so good, you can still get on the regular Note 20 and save $300. It's super clear the game that Samsung is playing. There's no other reason to suggest other motives. That's why you send the crown jewel phone out, so that all of the impressions are on this $1,300 phone. And then someone looking at this and not as tech savvy or looking to save some cash, well, like, you know, the Note 20 is probably still going to be a pretty good buy. I mean, they loved the Ultra, and I don't need some of these bells and whistles, so it's going to be great. And then a plastic back phone shows up on your doorstep. So it is what it is. From Nam, we need a Pixel phone on that Sony IMX586. Those Sony quad Bayer sensors are so much fun to dig into. Now that I understand what quad Bayer sensors do, and there's a new chapter in my book. This is the transition that's going to take us out of the podcast. Revisions for the book are done. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, $3.99 on Amazon Kindle. Or you can also read it through Kindle Unlimited. And I was planning on getting these revisions done in the first quarter of 2020. And then situation kind of wrecked all of those plans. But I'm finally through the revisions. There's a whole new chapter on audio gear for improving your video. There's a chapter on these new super megapixel sensors, these 64 megapixel and 48 megapixel sensors. Samsung's got 108 megapixels in a phone. There's a whole chapter explaining the differences in these subpixel arrangements. And then a ton of small revisions. Like my chapter on Android camera apps was originally written back during the LG V10. And I had tweaked it a little bit for some of the last couple of revisions, but that chapter now has whole new sections, a new look at modern camera apps, and some of the differences between multi-camera sensors and single-camera sensors, just comparative performance, a minor revision to the iPhone camera app, and then I still have the Windows phone. I had to write a new passage saying, when I originally wrote this book, Windows Phone was a thing. And the only reason I still include Windows Phone in this book is because they were so far ahead of the curve. Windows phones were years ahead of the camera competition. So I still have that passage in the book, but I had to write a new disclaimer saying, like, they're not a thing. Don't go and buy a Windows phone, but I need to leave this passage in here because I loved what Windows phones brought to the table. So, sorry, Matt Tyler, but Juan, flagships don't need pro modes. Just take it out of the box and point and shoot. You're never going to dig into settings, but I'm really concerned that it doesn't have 4K 60. But average consumers never change their video quality, but it needs to have 4K 60. But average people, but 4K 60. But regular consumers, but 4K 60. The game is exhausting. So, I have uploaded the PDF, the revised version, to Amazon, and I'm hoping that the revisions will actually cycle over by the end of this week. So if you already have a copy of my book, Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, on Amazon Kindle, it should update. You don't have to do anything. You don't need to rebuy the book, anything like that. That's why I like publishing on Amazon. If you haven't purchased it, you could buy it now. And you could see some of the out-of-date passages and have a good chuckle at how old this book is now. But as soon as that gets revised, then it'll get updated when Amazon kicks that over. You'll download a new version of the book, and it'll have all of the new passages and the new chapters and stuff. But, you know, all of the exercises, the explanation on camera features and camera settings, basic, you know, intro to photography concepts like composition, ISO, shutter speed. And then I also have a middle chapter, a middle passage that talks about inspiration, like how to look at classical art and use that to inform a style of photography, or how do you use features of a camera to draw the eye to a subject as opposed to just shooting everything unicorn barf HDR. So I'm really proud of it. This is actually a bigger refresh than I was expecting it to be. And I'm glad I took a little extra time to restructure some of these older passages. Because I think if I had published it the beginning of the year, it wouldn't be as robust an update as what I've actually landed on. So I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about some new merch. This new endangered species headphone jack shirt, now available on my Teespring, hopefully soon to be available under my YouTube videos, and I'll have a link on somegadgetguy.com, and a ton of videos. I've got way more stuff coming out. The next 2020 hearing video is going to be out, I hope, tomorrow. And then some other accessories to help us get more use out of our phone, like portable touchscreen monitors. So it's going to be good times. Gonna be really good times. So let's, from Aditya Nil, I have to read up about composition. Again, the title of my book is apt. It's Smartphone Photography for Noobs. There's a lot of, photography resource out there, but I wanted to focus on the actual tool. You know, like the phone in your pocket has a camera. We can have these conversations with that as the as the focus. And Matt Tyler, I do not miss the leaf blower guys at all. All right, so this was a longer show than I was intending it to be, but I feel like we're back on track, a more fun, sort of cranky nerdcore podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, as always, you know, starting your week off, this Monday morning conversation that we hold. This is my favorite way to get my week started, and this is an amazing community, and thank you for joining these discussions and being a good tech neighbor. I know I get cranky and ranty about this stuff, but it's all in the service of properly empowering us to lead these kinds of conversations with our own family and friends who might not be as on the pulse. If it's tech and politics, if it's tech and law, if it's consumerism, if it's, you know, tech support and right to repair, we need to be those resources that can help other people navigate these waters. And rather than just playing the whatever's popular on YouTube is the same opinion I'm going to have, it's worth it for us to take that little bit of extra effort just to dig around and look in some of the nooks and crannies to make sure we're holding to some good ideas and we're sharing good ideas with people who might not have the same access to these kinds of resources. So folks, I thank you for being amazing tech citizens. Good tech neighbors. I don't feel you properly get the credit you deserve. So I'm going to end my podcast like I often do and saying thank you for being good resources and contributors to these discussions. Folks, I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I hope to see y'all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Stay safe. There's still so much craziness going on out there, but be well. I hope to catch back. I love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.